We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Rob Doster here. I got Jeff Goodman with me.
Hell no.
John Tate.
Are we still live?
Till the 68 till I die.
I'm sorry, man. I blacked out.
Randolph Children.
DJ Khaled. You know the big DJ Khaled guy?
Hands broke up and in.
Goodman needs to be fired all the time.
Josh Pastner.
You're going to beat people straight up.
You know the deal.
They have no swag. They have no nothing.
Terrell McNeil.
From the bluest of the blue bloods to the smallest of the mid-majors.
This is Field of 68. After dark.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Field of 68 After Dark. It is Tuesday night. We are 48 hours away from Sweet 16 action resuming. We are 48 hours removed from the end of the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, and we have a lot to get to, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Rob Doster. I have Tyler Hansborough with me, and I have Kevin Sweeney with me. We are live SiriusXM Channel 84 and streaming over on the Stadium app. As always, stick with us after the show. We'll be going to Last Call on Stadium, where we will answer every question that you ask us, even if it involves P. Diddy and some things that happened on TMZ today. Who knows? We're going to get weird and wild with it. That's what we do on Last Call. We have to break down the Sweet 16 because I think this is as exciting and intriguing of a Sweet 16 as I can remember, probably since Kevin Sweeney was in diapers like 4 years ago. And we're going to rank every single team that's left in the NCAA tournament. But before we do, we got to get to the big story of the hour. In after year 15 as the head coach at Kentucky, Kentucky AD Mitch Barnhart had to put out a statement today confirming that John Calipari will indeed be back for his 16th season as the head coach. Sweeney, it is 2024, and we are living in a world where the Kentucky athletic director has to confirm that John Calipari is not being fired. Imagine having this conversation 5 years ago. Imagine having this conversation. I don't think we ever could have even pictured it.
It's crazy, right? I think really, you know, before the pandemic, the only way you thought that Cal would ever leave would be for an NBA job. And, you know, obviously has resisted overtures in the past, but you know, with where we are now, like, I think it was necessary. I think there needed to be a clear statement of what the direction was after the loss, you know, Thursday night against Oakland. Like, look, at the end of the day, I think this is probably the right move just because I don't think Kentucky had a plan for who's next. And I don't think there's a lot of good candidates right now. Like I think trying to do this so quickly would have been really, really challenging. But I also think like this sets the table for a true hot seat year for John Calipari, Kentucky in 2024-25. And it'd be fascinating to see how he approaches that.
Isn't that a problem though, Sweeney? Isn't that a problem that after a year where you lose in the second round as a six seed, a year removed from getting upset as a number two seed in the first round of the tournament, a year removed from not even making the NCAA tournament in 2021, isn't it a little bit problematic that that Kentucky was in a situation where they didn't have a choice? You know what I mean? Where they didn't have a plan of action if this team built with freshmen happened to lose earlier in the NCAA tournament than expected.
Look, I wonder if this is different if Kentucky doesn't have a pretty good February and early March. Like, yes, they had, you know, some surprising losses, but they won at Auburn and they won at Tennessee. Like, I don't think anyone entered this NCAA tournament thinking there was a world where Cal was on the hot seat in a week, right? And that's what happened. I think, look, part of this is also just the state of the carousel and where we are. Like, how many names out there, and we're going to talk about Louisville as well, like, how many big names out there will satisfy what Kentucky wants, right? I mean, Scott Drew is the obvious name because of you know, just going through this with Louisville. Like, go on Twitter and read what Kentucky fans say about Scott Drew. Like, Kentucky fans are not excited about the concept of Scott Drew. And maybe they're not. There's not going to be a hire that could excite them. But, like, I just don't know how you can be prepared to fill this job because it is such a big, big vacancy. And, you know, most of the A-list and even B-list coaches in college basketball have massive contracts that are tough to get out of. So, look, I think it makes sense to have to – I think it makes sense to have to go through a year where you're preparing like you might have to make a move and you can get a better sense of what the market really is. But yeah, look, like, should Kentucky have been more prepared for an outcome like this? Maybe. I mean, look, the signs were there. As good as their highs were this season, this Kentucky team was never consistent enough to believe in this NCAA tournament.
You say that, but Tyler, I had Kentucky in the national title game in my bracket, and so I want to know from your perspective on this, Tyler. When you are a player and you're dealing with a coaching change, and there's smoke around whether or not that coach is going to continue, like, how does that affect the locker room? I knew you probably didn't deal with it in college, but I'm sure at some point along the way in your travels in the professional ranks, you played for a coach that was on the quote unquote hot seat. How does that impact the players on the team?
Yeah, psychologically can have a big impact. And, you know, the situation is very difficult as a player because, especially in college, you look at the coach kind of as a leader and also somebody that can provide you with hope and also a blueprint. What Kentucky did today I think is good. They came out and said, hey, we're rolling with Cal. And one thing about Cal you got to give him credit for is he's – really good salesman. I mean, he is a smooth talker, and that's one of his pluses, is he's a very good recruiter. And so I think Cal has a way with his kids of you know, talking to them and having a big impact from that perspective. But also you've got to think about some of these kids that had these that had this disappointing year, especially, you know, I wasn't too fond of some of Cal's comments that he made post game after they lost to Oakland. You know, some guys didn't hit shots, you know, something like that. And the thought that a young team that didn't play defense all year was just going to turn it around and flip a switch in the tournament, as I was thinking, was pretty comical. That's tough for an older team to do. And it's tough for a very talented team to do. And Kentucky was inconsistent defensively all year. And, you know, at times, you know, there was a post-game press conference. Cal said, don't come at my kids, come at me. Well, he almost went after his kids after they lost in the tournament, which is super shocking. But, no, I don't think that Kentucky was going to move from Cal, especially with that buyout. And I do think that he'll be able to finesse his way and talk his kids into kind of buying into the program and switching things up.
Does he need to change what he's doing, though, Tyler? Can he continue to build around one-and-done freshmen when it's proven that in an era where guys get fifth and sixth years, when it's proven that in an era where the transfer portal is allowing players to be eligible immediately and NIL is keeping more talented guys around for longer, can he just sit here and just say, hey, you know what, we're going to bet on the best 18 and 19-year-olds in the world?
No, that formula is outdated. You need to hit the portal, and you need to get older guys. I think there's a huge value in 25-year-olds. It's even 26-year-olds. I think physically, their experience and, you know, what they bring to the table, to me, outweighs an 18, 19-year-old kid because physically they're much stronger, and also that experience and their basketball knowledge is by far more advanced. And also the youth isn't winning in the tournament right now. We've seen that.
Sweeney, how old are you?
24.
How old is Cormac Ryan?
I think 25. He's about my age, yeah.
He's 25. So, like, there's guys – Sweeney's been doing this for, like, 3 years. And there's guys that are older than Sweeney still playing for some of the biggest programs in college basketball. If you're – Sweeney, I'm putting you in a position. You got to be the advisor for Coach Cal. What do you tell him to do? Like, how do you change what's happening? How do you turn this thing around? Because that's going to be the single biggest story hanging over everything Kentucky in college basketball for probably the next 365 days, if we're going to be honest. This is like the fourth straight day on After Dark we've talked about it.
I think, obviously, the first task is seeing if you can keep Reed Sheppard, right? I mean, look, him returning to Kentucky would be massive. I don't know if they can pull that off, but like, I know Cal likes to be, you know, don't waste your draft stock, go when you're ready type thing. But like, I think if you're Cal, you got to make as strong a push as you can to get Reed back. And I think from there, I would build the way that North Carolina built this year. Like, I think, I mean, Hansberg can attest to this. This is not the most talented team North Carolina's had. I think you could argue that this North Carolina team is less talented than last year's North Carolina team. But it's a group that fits together. You know, the words you hear out of this Carolina team all year long has been role allocation, right? Everybody's bought into who they are. You have a Cormac Ryan or Harrison Ingram who doesn't need the ball in his hands to be successful, who's willing to buy in and do the little things, who can hit outside shots and space the floor for that nucleus that they have. And I think if I'm Kentucky, right, I don't have to get away from having freshmen. I don't have to – like if I want my best player to be a Rob Dillingham type or a Reed Shepard type or, you know, whatever that may be, you know, the Knox kid that's coming in, Carter Knox, who's phenomenal, right? Like you can still build with one or two stars. I think the problem that Kentucky's had is they haven't had guys that fit into roles. And I thought this year, like things got more complicated, the more bodies got added to the mix. And Kentucky, I mean, I almost felt like Cal got decision paralysis this year where, all right, which big do I want? Do I want Onyenso? Do I want Ivicic? Do I want Aaron Bradshaw? Do I want Trey Mitchell? Like Cal had too many options for his own good. I mean, this team was at its best early in the season when he had like eight guys and he had to play that rotation. So I think if I'm Kentucky, like, I approach it less is more. Like, go get guys, you know, go get some culture guys in the portal who have played high-level basketball, who've won big games, surround them or surround your current nucleus with that. And if you lose a freshman along the way, that's okay, right? It's not about accumulating the most talent in 2024, 25 college basketball. It's about building a team.
Yeah, I don't think that being able to have five freshmen on the floor is something that's going to work. I mentioned this the other night, but I keep going back to, you know, take UConn, for example, right? They have a freshman in a very important role, but it is a freshman. It is one. They got a guy coming off the bench that is getting like 10 a game right now, Jalen Stewart, and that's it. Everybody else is either upperclassmen or sophomores that have come back to school. Hell, they got a sophomore lottery pick that came back. And if you're going to do that, if you're Coach Cal, and you're going to say, all right, we're going to try to get Reed Shepard back. We're going to find a way to bring back a couple of these big freshmen. We're going to go hit the portal and bring in a couple of third and fourth, maybe even fifth year guys, right? And then supplement that with like two or three freshmen that are going to sit there and play a role and then maybe develop to the point in March where, you know, Stephen Castle is now a guy that can take over a game when needed. He wasn't that as a freshman, or it wasn't that at the start of the season. That's the way that you have to do it. And I will also just say, like, at some point, you're going to have to rip that Band-Aid off, because I don't see an old dog learning a new trick in this situation, right? Like a leopard doesn't change their spots. I don't know how many cliches I can throw at you about that, but I think at some point you're going to have to make that decision, and the buyout's going to be big and the divorce is going to be painful. But I think that that's something that we all know is eventually coming. And the sooner that you do it and the sooner that you make the move and start moving forward, the better off it's going to be. Does that mean you can afford to pay $50 million in buyouts before paying the what, like $6 million a year you're going to have to pay? Well, you know what? Kentucky fans are deep pocketed. And since everybody in college basketball is begging fans to be able to fund NIL and all of this other stuff, why not keep reaching out to them? Because that's something's going to have to change. I just don't see, like, you keep beating your head against the wall in this situation. So we all know where this ending is headed. You know, let's put it like this. You never get off the hot seat, right? You're always on the hot seat. Look at Brad Brunell. He's never gotten off. He's been to two Sweet 16s in like the last 5 years, and he's always on the hot seat, like every single year. You can look at guys like Josh Pastner when he was at Memphis, right? Like he'd be on the hot seat, he'd have a good year, but he'd never get off the hot seat. It was always one bad year away from having people question whether or not you need to get fired again. And Cal had his best year in like 5 years this year. Losing the first round, everybody wants you gone. Never get off the hot seat. Speaking of schools in the state of Kentucky, Sweeney, we got to talk about Louisville, because this search has been all over the map. It started out with everyone saying, yeah, I think it's going to be Dusty May. And then it wasn't Dusty May. And then it went from Dusty May to, is it Shaheen? Is it Pat Kelsey? Is it Josh Schertz? Is it now Richard Pitino is the name that's getting thrown around now? Like, I just, where do they go? What do they do? And how much do you mess up when everyone knows you're going to fire your coach in January? And now we're sitting here 3 days away, 4 days, five, 6 days away from April. And you still don't have a vacancy hired, and you just got sniped by a program in the Big Ten that probably isn't as good of a basketball school as you are.
Look, like I don't want to read too much into the Dusty thing because I think at the end of the day, Michigan was a better fit for Dusty. I think it, you know, I don't think this was about Louisville. I think it was about Michigan with the Dusty decision. That being said, like Louisville spent way too much time worrying about candidates that were never coming. I mean, if Dusty, like Dusty played them, Scott Drew played them. This search has been chaotic, and now to be in a spot where your options are either mid-major coaches who've never won a game in the NCAA tournament, or Richard Pitino, who, if his last name was Richard Smith, would not be a candidate for this job. Like, I mean, like, what are we doing? And look, I understand they want to be careful with like who they hire, and they don't want to bring in someone with shaky past. But like at some point, like you need to hire a dude who's proven. It's hard for me to gamble this job. It's such a big job. And the expectations right now, like this moment in this program is so pivotal. I have a hard time just like rolling the dice and saying, Pat Kelsey, you're a good coach. Maybe this will work, right? Like that, I mean, that feels really, really risky. Look, I've always kind of said that maybe Eric Musselman winds up kind of being like the last man standing here and just like sticks around and nobody really wants him. And then they just kind of get stuck with him. And the more I think about it, the more I think that like may happen here in the next couple of days, because if they can't rally behind Richard Pitino or Pat Kelsey or someone like this, and I think that's going to divide all the boosters and decision makers and whatnot, then like I don't know who they're going to get behind. And maybe at some point you say, all right, well, this guy makes the Sweet 16 pretty much every year. Why don't we just roll the dice with this guy?
Yeah, I still think the most funny outcome would have been if John Calipari found his soft landing by heading across the state and going to Louisville. Tyler, I want you to put yourself in the shoes of 17-year-old high school senior Tyler Hansbrough. And let's pretend that you are being recruited by this Louisville program, right? And you are evaluating schools and looking at all this stuff, and you see this going on. How does that impact the way that you look at it? And how difficult is it going to be for them, even after they make this hire? Like, it's like, do we even trust that this is the right decision? Do we trust that this is the right guy? How are you going to be able to convince recruits that it took you 3 months to be able to figure out if this is the dude that you actually want? And it feels like it's probably not going to be the dude that you actually wanted at the end of the day.
The way I would look at it, if I was in high school, actually I was being recruited by Missouri when they were going through a lot of issues, and I didn't go to Missouri. I didn't really take that recruiting all that seriously. So it's hard to really look at a school when they really don't have a clear direction. And, right now Louisville is an absolute mess, and I'm not sure many recruits are looking at that as a landing spot. They're going to have to find ways to make it appealing through the portal or some other, NIL resources are going to have to come out.
Sweeney, imagine if it's Richard Pitino. Like, just imagine that. How fun, like, that's as good. That's as funny of a coaching situation that we're going to end up with, I think, that you could possibly imagine.
It'd be unbelievable. It'd be an unbelievable amount of pressure on Richard, right? I mean, think about how much weight he would carry walking into that job. And it doesn't mean he can't handle it, but I mean, he is always like, it has been hard to deal with being a Pitino in his career. And he's tried to get away from it at times and go, work for Billy Donovan and whatnot. But I mean, to go and be the head coach of Louisville, being the guy who has to fix it, who has to be the savior, man, that's a heck of an ask.
Yeah, and for the record, Richard Pitino made the NCAA tournament a couple times at Minnesota, which is not an easy job, and he just made the NCAA tournament and won the Mountain West tournament with New Mexico this year. He's a pretty good coach. He may not be his dad, but he's a pretty good coach, and I think that you could there's worse ways that you could end up or guys that you could end up with, but it still would be just absolutely hilarious if he ended up as a head coach at Louisville. He's already tired of listening to people compare him to his dad. Imagine how that would work if he was the head coach at Louisville. Listen, when we get back, we're going to stop talking about coaching changes. We're going to talk about the actual basketball because that's what we're all here for. We're getting into the Sweet 16. I'm going to get these guys to tell me how you beat the UConn Huskies next. The best month of the year is here, which is why you need to know that we are partnered with BetMGM. We'll be using BetMGM lines for making all of our picks and predictions, and we'll have special offers for the listeners and the viewers of the Field of 68. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, you can use bonus code FIELD, and you will get up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's the best part. All you need to do is deposit and bet $10 of your hard-earned money to get it. This is what you have to do to make it work. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using that bonus code FIELD. Deposit at least $10 and place your first wager on any game. You'll get up to $1,500 in bonus bets if your bet loses. Just make sure you use that bonus code FIELD when you sign up. Most importantly, we have some fun stuff coming up for the rest of the NCAA tournament. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops odds boost, and the thing that I love the most, a nice little parlay boost, as well as a ridiculous array of prop bets for anything that you could possibly imagine betting on. From odds on getting to the Final Four to national championship futures, I'm calling it right now. BetMGM is the king of the prop bet. So go download the BetMGM app. Use that code FIELD and sign up today. And while I've got you, a quick request. The best way to support the Field of 68 content you get for free is to engage with us. Rate and review the pod in any podcast app. Like and share the YouTube videos that you enjoy. Tell your friends about us. It all helps in a world where the algorithm is king. And now, back to the show.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to the Tuesday evening edition of the Field of 68 After Dark. Rob Doster, Tyler Hansbrough, Kevin Sweeney. We're live, SiriusXM, Channel 84, streaming over on the Stadium app. Gentlemen, I just want to put out a little disclaimer here. If you happen to work on a staff at San Diego State, just turn the next segment off. You don't want to hear this. We got no good advice for you. We're not going to give you anything to learn about how to stop the UConn Huskies. So, Tyler, I'm going to go to you first on this one. Give me a game plan, man. What do you have to do? How do you beat this UConn team?
First of all, I want to say that UConn has been my favorite to win the tournament probably since they destroyed my Hills. I think what you have to do is, first of all, I think you have to be connected defensively. And, you know, the Iowa State team, they're, you know, you have to put a lot of ball pressure and you have to force them to make turnovers, and you can't allow them to run their sets or dictate their style of play. UConn has a very, sophisticated offense. They're very fluid. They make teams guard them, and a lot of cuts, a lot of off the ball movement. So you have to force pressure on the ball and force them to turn over. But also, I do think there has to be a little luck involved, because I think UConn is such a good team. I think you have to shoot it lights out, and you have to limit your turnovers and, you know, careless turnovers. So you have to be clicking on all cylinders and have a little bit of luck, in my opinion.
Sweeney?
Look, like, to me, the first thing is that Jaden Ledee has to get Donovan Klingon in foul trouble, right? Like, yes. He has to win that matchup, because San Diego State can't score. Like, if Ledee is silenced by Klingon, which, I mean, Klingon has dominated the rim in pretty much every game he's played, like, San Diego State's going to score 37 points and they lose by 20, right? Ledee is their offense. They need him to win that matchup. You start there. San Diego State is physical and disruptive on the defensive end. They defend the 3-8 really, really well. You're going to have to contest and run them off the line and make UConn make tough twos. And then you have to hope that your other guys step up. San Diego State is not a good three-point shooting team, but they have guys who can make shots. Micah Parrish is 29% this year. He's a guy who can make shots. We saw that last year in the NCAA tournament. Reese Dixon Waters is a guy who can really make outside shots. Again, 33%. But, like, we know the history there. We know what he shot at USC. Like, he is a guy who can make, you know, generate offense. We saw Darion Trammell last year in March make big shots and carry this team to the Final Four. They need that again, right? San Diego State has been very beatable this year when no one other than Ledee steps up. They've had a good chance to beat good teams when one other guy steps up, and they can beat anyone when multiple guys other than Jaden Ledee step up. They need big showings across the board to have a chance against the Huskies.
Yeah, so you guys nailed it. There's three things that you have to do to beat UConn, in my opinion. First one, blow up their sets. Don't let them run offense. You got that one, Tyler. Second one, get Donovan Klingon in foul trouble. You nailed that one, Sweeney. And the third one is you have to have an outlier shooting performance from beyond the arc. I think Creighton was like 15 for 29 or something like that. Kansas was 9 for 14 when they beat UConn. And then the Seton Hall one was a little bit weird because Donovan Klingon got injured, but like they just beat the hell out of them physically and just did not let them run anything that they wanted to run. And those are the things that you have to do if you want to have a chance. I think that with Jaden Ledee, that's actually a pretty good matchup for San Diego State if you want to try to get Klingon to foul trouble. Ledee is a little bit more of a jump shooter than like a straight up low post back to the basket guy. And if you force Klingon to come out from away from the rim to like 15 feet, I think you got a chance to be able to get him off his feet on a pump fake or you know, have him be a little undisciplined defensively because he has a bad habit of kind of committing some fouls when he probably shouldn't. So those are the three things you have to do. And even if you do that, it's still going to be a big ask. The one thing I would also add, Micah Parrish, you mentioned him, Sweeney, like that dude needs to go off because he kind of plays the four spot for him offensively, at least in their starting lineup. And the way that you can kind of attack UConn's defense, which has had quite a bit of success in Big East play the last couple of years, is go at Alex Caravan. He's not the best one-on-one defender. I don't think San Diego State is necessarily built for it. Is Illinois, is Iowa State, Tyler, do you think either of those teams, if they end up being matched up in the Elite Eight, like are either of those teams built for it? Because I kind of feel like Illinois is.
I actually think Iowa State, and I think because Iowa State's kind of an older, more veteran team, and also they get out and really put a lot of defensive pressure on teams, would be my – that would be a team that I would look at that could give UConn a little bit of trouble. My only question with Illinois is, yeah, they have athletic guys. Terrence Shannon Jr. can really get it going, and he can be an explosive scorer, as he's shown. I just don't think they're connected defensively enough to really give UConn those, you know, issues because UConn is so, you know, lethal offensively and they run their set so well.
Yeah, you got to be locked in for 25 seconds, and asking some of those Illinois guys to pay attention for 25 seconds might be a big ask, Sweeney.
Yeah, look, like I think both teams have a shot because both teams are playing really well. They're both really confident. Like, I mean, I think everybody's kind of seen now the pictures of like Brad Underwood and the staff like running into the locker room with super soakers. But like that whole like the vibes around Illinois are really good right now. And I think a lot of like playing UConn right now is like you have to walk in there with the confidence that you can beat them, right? They feel so overwhelming. Like you're gonna take a punch. And how do you respond to that? Like I think Illinois is equipped to do that, and they have the scoring to go point for point with UConn, right? I mean, you know, the ability that they can do, that they can get downhill and force your defense to collapse and send two to the ball and then spray it and attack closeouts is really unique. But for Iowa State, like if there's a defense that can disrupt UConn, it's that one. I mean, look, remember last year at PK85, these teams played each other in the championship game, and like that game wasn't close, but it also wasn't as much of a blowout as 18 points suggested. Like, I think that was a game with 10 minutes to go, and UConn turned it over 19 times in that game, did not look very good. Iowa State just didn't have the offense. This year's Iowa State team is a much better offensive team than last year's. And I think that if Iowa State can keep UConn to 70 points and grind them out and turn them over 17, 18, 19 times and like let Taman Lipsy go make plays, they got a chance, right? Again, I don't think there is no easy recipe. As Doster said, like you have to do three things, and that's to get you in the door. But I do think that both those teams have a real chance to knock off UConn if they get to that point.
Yeah. Can I just say for the record, Sweeney, like if Iowa State holds UConn to 70, they're kind of built like a team that would end up losing that game by 12. Like I just don't like that matchup at all for Iowa State. Cause I think they'll get beat up on the defensive end of the floor. Tyler, the matchup, every single person in the United States of America, outside of the good folks in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and the nice people in Clemson, South Carolina, what everybody wants to see is North Carolina Arizona. It's the Caleb Love comeback game. It's the Caleb Love revenge game, all for the right to get to the Final Four. Can Alabama or Clemson ruin this party?
I actually think that Clemson matches up pretty well with Arizona. And the reason I say that is because Arizona is big. In Shefflin, PJ Hall, those are, you know, they're pretty big as well. And Clemson, to me, has kind of been a slept-on team. I've always talked about this. They actually have a lot of players. Joe Girard can get you an outside shot. He can get hot. They also have inside presence. They're athletic and big. And I actually think they, in the ACC play, they weren't really playing. You know, they had some ups and downs, and they weren't all that consistent. But before the conference play, Clemson, you know, Clemson beat Alabama at Alabama. I mean, they're a pretty good team. They have the players and the talent. And also, I hate talking about this because I don't want our team, you know, I'm a little nervous about us overlooking Alabama can bring it. They have a high-octane offense. Marcus Sears can really get it going. They can get up and down. We're going to have to bring it. But, yeah, this game, it's looking like it could be the showdown between my Tar Heels in Arizona and Caleb Love, RJ Davis, ACC Player of the Year, Pac-12 Player of the Year going at it. We all went through what, you know, especially I did, the emotions of last year in North Carolina and all the drama. So it will definitely be some bragging rights involved in that game for sure.
Tyler, how do people – associated with the North Carolina program right now view Caleb? Like, how do you view him? How do guys, I don't want you to necessarily speak for each individual alum, but just a general consensus. Like, how do guys, do you still like, is there any bitterness there?
Not on my behalf. And I've said this, and I'm so glad that we're having such a good year for North Carolina, and also Caleb's having a good year. I've been on shows with you last year where I've said that I really felt like Caleb took too much of the blame and was, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of fingers pointed in his direction. There was too much that went wrong last year for one guy to take that responsibility, in my opinion. And I'm extremely happy that Caleb's had such a good year. And this has been a situation where the portal has been a good outcome for both parties. And you can see the spirit that North Carolina is playing with this year has been unbelievable. They're playing extremely hard. They have good chemistry, and they're a really together team. And also, you can see Caleb and the way he's playing, and he seems to have a great spirit about him as well. And I think it's worked out for both parties. And also, I love Caleb. He hit one of the biggest shots in North Carolina history at the Final Four when we took down the Dukies, and we will never forget that. So whenever I do have a final home, I'll have a big picture of that hanging somewhere.
Yeah, he Caleb Love ended Coach K, which is something that should live in North Carolina lore forever. And hopefully North Carolina fans will be able to embrace him. Sweeney, you got about 15 seconds here. Are we going to get North Carolina, Arizona, yes or no?
Yeah, I think so. It's written. We got to have it.
It is written by Kevin Sweeney himself. Listen, when we get back, there's an entire other side of the bracket that we got to talk about. I'm going to make Tyler say nice things about Duke. And also, why do people hate Zach Edey? That's next. Whether you are a world-class athlete or a podcaster like myself, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. After a six-month season loaded with cross-country travel and late nights, I can promise you that proper recovery is a priority for me these days. That is why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of The Field of 68. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers that's powered by the Energy Enhancement System, or the EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in New Jersey or at hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Are you interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Well, all you got to do is go to unifiedhealing.com/field to learn more and find a center near you. You can find that link in the description below. That's unified, UNIFYD healing.com/field. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before you undertake a new healthcare regimen, including the EE system. Well, welcome back to the Tuesday evening edition of the Field of 68 After Dark. We are live on College Sports Radio, Sirius XM Channel 84. We're streaming over on Stadium. Tyler Hansborough, Kevin Sweeney, Rob Dosser. Tyler, we did have somebody in the chat after my sign-off was, I'm going to make you say nice things about Duke. Andy in Colorado said, make Tyler say nice things about Illinois as well. He said nice things about Illinois. He just complimented you in the last segment. Tyler is back on the Illinois bandwagon, right, T?
I'm back on the train, man. I'm with you, Illini. No, I'm just joking.
Yeah, of course you are. There you go. All right, Sweeney, I want to talk about Zach Edey here because one of the great mysteries to me in the world of college basketball is how a guy like Zach Edey has become a villain of sorts. Like, I just don't understand it. You know, when you have someone like Tyler, when you have someone like a J.J. Redick or a Christian Laettner or some of these other guys that have been villains in college basketball, like, part of it is their demeanor. And correct me if I'm wrong here, T, but, like, you could kind of be grating to opposing fans. I think that's probably the friendly way to say it, right? And I understand why people would not like some of those players on the court. Whereas Zach Edey is just like this really quiet, really thoughtful, really introspective guy who just so happens to be 7'4" and completely dominant. And Purdue has a chance to do one of the, like, great feel-good stories in the history of sports, period. Losing to a 16 seed and going back and winning a national title. And it feels like that's the kind of thing, generally speaking, the public at large would want to root for. And it feels like everybody is rooting for their downfall, and I just don't understand it at all. Explain this to me, Sweeney.
I mean, look, it pisses me off. Like, I hate it. Because, look, like, the Zach Edey story is one of the coolest stories in recent college basketball memory. Here's an Asian kid from Canada who played hockey and baseball, grew up to be 7+ feet tall, picked up basketball late, grinded his tail off, went from the 429th ranked recruit in the country or something along those lines into, you know, supposed to redshirt as a freshman, turned into a rotation player as a freshman, then a key contributor on a team that feels, you know, heartbreak as a sophomore, becomes his team as a junior. He wins National Player of the Year. They, you know, have an unprecedented loss to Fairleigh Dickinson. He turns around, gets substantially better from junior to senior year, is National Player of the Year again, and now has a chance to write that redemption story. Like, he as you said, Duster, he's a nice kid. Like, one of the, like, easiest people to deal with that we cover, I would say. Like, you know, having talked to Zach a couple times, like, unbelievable with his time, like, great to people, cares about Purdue, like, everything about college basketball we should celebrate. And yet people hate him because he's tall and, like, doesn't play an quote-unquote exciting style of basketball. Like, I don't understand, like, did people, like, was Shaq not exciting to people? Like yeah, Zach is different than Shaq, but, like, it's the same idea, right? He uses brute force to dominate his opponent. He wins with positioning and angles and physicality. Like, he is an awesome college basketball player, and I, for one, hope that he completes this story and is remembered as an all-time great in college basketball. But, man, like, it really annoys me that people – again, I'm not asking you to be, like, Zach Edey's biggest cheerleader, but, like, the fact that he gets consistent hate when his story is, like, one of success really, really, like, irks me. I just can't get over it.
Yeah, and anytime I tweet something about Zach Edey and I get a response that says, he's just tall, boom, auto-mute. Done. I don't want to hear it. Like, it pisses me off so much. I'm glad that you compared him to Shaq. Tyler, what do you think Zach Edey's rap career would be like?
Oh, God.
It would be about as good as all our rap career, which would be pretty non-existent. I mean, Shaq, it wouldn't be on Shaq's level. Shaq wasn't that bad of a rapper, but I mean, I don't think anybody's got Shaq on their playlist right now either. So,
In all seriousness, Tyler, you were a guy that was National Player of the Year and then came back to school at a program that is consistently one of the best in America and as visible as anybody in college basketball when you were a senior. I'm sure you've dealt with some of this. Like, what is it like for a player to kind of, it's different now with like Twitter and social media, but when you kind of get that negative attention, does that weigh on you? Do you pay attention to it all? Can you block that out?
You know what? I think it was my sophomore year. I stopped listening to what reporters and other people had to say about me because I realized that no matter how well I played, there was always going to be somebody out there that didn't like my game or had something negative to say. And I actually think that, you know, I hope that Zach Edey isn't paying attention to all these people that don't like his style of play or all these critics, because you know, I think Coach Painter said it very well, that a lot of these people have no clue or any basketball intelligence. And if you followed Zach Edey in his career, like, you can tell how much better as a player that he's gotten, and also his commitment to Purdue and coming back to the same school. I mean, as college basketball fans and as passionate fans, we should respect and actually get a sigh of relief that there's actually somebody out there that has a little bit of a loyalty to their program. And I think he's been a great thing for Purdue. And I love watching Edey. I think he's dominant. And, you know, it's unfortunate that he takes a lot of hate. But, hey, listen, you know what? That's a good thing. That means he's doing his thing. And no matter how well he plays, there's going to be, you know, a critic out there. And there's always going to be critics. But also, that's because he's that good.
Mm-hmm. I will tell you guys this. If UConn doesn't win the national title, right, if I got to root for somebody else, or if there's a situation where they lose to someone, that's the only team where I – or that's the one team where I'm like, yeah, okay, I can probably live with that one, right? Like, you might troll me on that, but I can live with UConn losing and Zach getting his national title. That'd be a hell of a national title game, right? Purdue trying to get their first one since, what, like forever? And UConn trying to go back to back. I think that would be something that would be very good for the Field of 68 and some of our live shows that we're going to be doing at the Final Four. That's coming up. We'll tell you guys about that. Make sure you stay tuned here. Let's go to the South region. Actually, no, real quick, Sweeney, Creighton, Tennessee. How do you see that matchup playing out?
Yeah, Tennessee's been cold from three, but I do think that they're built to score on this Creighton defense, right? Like, Creighton's going to try to run you off the line and then, you know, funnel you into the lane. Well, Connect is a great floater guy. Zakai Ziegler can really make floaters. Like, Vescovi, like, they have those guys who can make those tough middies that you have to make to beat Creighton. I think they'll do a great job defensively. They have the bodies to throw at Shireman and make his life difficult, chase him around all day with Josiah Jordan James. I think Tennessee wins that game and, you know, sets up a potential matchup with Purdue. Although I will say, maybe we'll talk about this in the last call, like, I do think Gonzaga has a real shot. Right? They've been very discounted. I think Gonzaga has a real chance to push Purdue on Friday night.
Goodman quite literally said they have no chance. Zero. Zero chance. And I think it's significantly higher than zero, but I think that Purdue will rightfully be a pretty heavy favorite in that game. And I would be moderately surprised if Gonzaga found a way to win. Tyler, I want to go to the South region here. And I'm going to hit you on this. So we've talked a lot about this Houston-Duke matchup, right? And I think it's because Houston is a top four team and Duke is Duke. And it feels like that's something a lot of people projected. Then you have this clash of styles between the physicality of Houston and the skill level of Duke. And meanwhile, you still have this Marquette team on the other side of the bracket that, when Tyler Kolek is healthy, has for the most part played an elite level of basketball this season. Are we overlooking Marquette, or have we kind of forgotten about just how good this team is when Tyler Kolek and Cam Jones and Osa Iguodaro are clicking?
I don't know. Marquette makes me scratch my head. I mean, yeah, they've gotten a lot of hype. They've played well. They have really good players. Cam Jones, to me, was hitting big shots the other night. But also, Western Kentucky, my Hilltoppers had the lead in the first half, and I know that they kind of closed the door late in the second half, but the score didn't really, you know, wasn't a good indication of how that game went. Yeah, I think Marquette has the potential. They have the firepower if their players play their potential. I like Kolick. I think he gets his team involved a lot, and I think Cam Jones, he can get you a bucket. He can take people off the dribble. Iguodara, he's a presence. I mean, he can, you know, a good, versatile big. But I don't know. I mean, I don't have them going to my Final Four. Maybe I am overlooking them, but they're going to have to play their potential.
Sweeney?
Look, like I want to believe that this Marquette team can push Houston or Duke, because I think each matchup they have some edges in. I think against Houston, their, you know, ball handling and Kolick's ability to handle pressure, I think, helps them. And I think against Duke, their ability to kind of put Flip in space with what Oso can do, and you know, just put their defense in conflict. I think those matchups are appealing with this Marquette group. Like, I won't be shocked. Like, obviously, they have to get through NC State first, and NC State's rolling, and I think we just kind of assume that the Cinderella story's over now, but, I mean, I would have said it was over heading into last weekend, and here we are. So, I don't know. Like, I think they're a real competitor in this South region. Like, at the end of the day, I think they've been overlooked a lot. I think we tried really hard to say they were the team that was going to get bounced last week, and they didn't. So, at some point, like, we got to believe, and Kolick looking healthy is a great sign.
Yeah, I kind of led in that bandwagon. I had to actually had Marquette losing to Western Kentucky in my bracket because I figured at some point someone's going to have to pick a one or a two to lose, and lo and behold, this is the one season where you don't have any top two seed losing at all. So I'll take all the L's on that one. Houston and Duke, Sweeney, the physicality of Houston, the skill level of Duke, how do you see this matchup playing out?
I mean, look, the all year has been Duke has no dogs. Well, they're going up against the biggest dogs there are in Houston. Like, this is the ultimate test of how tough this Duke team is. Look, I think Houston's vulnerable right now because of their depth concerns. But, like, I still don't want to bet against Jamal Shedd in a game like this, right? Like, I think when you have the best player on the floor and the toughest dude on the floor, which they have in Jamal Shedd, like, you got a great chance to win. Obviously, Duke's guard play was phenomenal against James Madison. And, like, they get that level of play, they can beat anyone in college basketball. Like, they can win a national championship the way they played against JMU. But I will take Houston here. I think Jamal Shedd's ability to control the game on both ends of the floor will shine, and they find a way to beat a Duke team that I think is playing well right now.
Tyler?
I'm rolling with Houston. And, you know, I've always said, and I've said – this all season is Filipowski is a very dynamic big, but he doesn't handle contact or physicality all that well. The one thing that really gives Duke problems is when they have other teams have a big that is physical. And, you know, I think that kind of beats Filipowski down a little bit. And I really don't think that he's designed to bang with the bigs and then expect him offensively to be as dynamic and an outside-inside threat. I think that really hinders him. But also, Duke has a lot of NBA players, the Tyrese Proctor kid and then the McCain kid and then Roach. You know, if those guys get it going, they could definitely beat Houston. But what makes Houston great is kind of like what's kind of killed Duke all year is that physical – a team that's really connected and brings it defensively. That's given Duke some issues. So for that, I'm going to take Houston.
Yeah, I kind of tend to agree with all you guys. The only thing that I'll say is what we saw Texas A&M do, right, was have a couple guys go nuts, especially late, and a couple guards get hot. And the one thing I do think Duke has in their corner, which we haven't talked enough about, is they have three different guys that can go get you like 20 in the backcourt on a given night in McCain, Roach, and Proctor. I don't know if they're going to do it. It's not easy to try to create against those Houston guards, but I think that they'll have a chance. Listen, when we get back, we are going to be re-ranking the Sweet 16. I think everyone can kind of guess who number one is and who number 16 is, but there's 14 teams in the middle, and we'll tell you who the best are. That's next. By now, you guys have surely heard about Autograph, an app founded by Tom Brady with the intention of disrupting the way that fans consume content covering their favorite teams. This is how the app works. All of the podcasters, bloggers, and digital creators covering a team have their content sent to that team's page in the Autograph app. Instead of having to bounce from site to site or trying to navigate the safer workspaces on Twitter, you can just scroll through Autograph. This isn't a hard sell. This is the truth. I am a UConn fan, and I use the Autograph app to keep up with the writers I read and the pods that I listen to about UConn basketball. The best part is that every piece of content that you consume gives you reward points. The more you get, the more chances you have at things like discounted tickets to games and the grand prize, a trip to the LA Regional and a spot in a suite for the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games. Here's the best part. We've partnered with Autograph to donate $1 to the V Foundation every time someone downloads the app using the code F68, with a minimum of $2,500 getting donated. The app is free. So download, use the code F68, help us raise a little bit of money for cancer research, and give Autograph a try. I promise you it will be worth it. And while we're here, a quick reminder, make sure that you subscribe to The Daily. We have new landing pages with deep dives into each coaching change, as well as a tracker that provides scouting reports on the transfers that have entered the portal that you are going to want to know about. Hit the link below to subscribe.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome back to the Field of 68 After Dark. We are live on Tuesday night. Rob Doster, Tyler Hansbrough, Kevin Sweeney, and we are going to be re-ranking the teams in the Sweet 16. We're going to go by groups of four and just kind of talk through what this top 16 looks like. So we'll start with 16 through 13. I think we all kind of agree the 16th team in our poll. And for the record, this was a bunch of us at the Field of 68 all voted on these teams, and this is the consensus. So if you have to blame anybody, you got to blame all of us. It's not just me. I'm not going to be the only one taking the heat for this one. To be honest, it was just Kevin Sweeney. He was the one that put this together all by himself. So NC State fans, Kevin Sweeney hates your program. We have them at 16, San Diego State at 15, Gonzaga at 14, and Clemson at 13. Sweeney, anything here that you think is out of place?
Yeah, I had Gonzaga a little bit higher. I think I had Gonzaga above Alabama, so they were in the top 12. Like, I think Gonzaga is playing like an elite team in college basketball right now. Like, they have high level point guard play with Nembhard, the post scoring with Ike. Guys are really fitting into their roles. Like, I think Hickman and Ben Gregg have started to really play well. I think Gregg's ability to space the floor has really put a lot of pressure on defenses. And look, like I said, I think this is a different Gonzaga team than the one that kind of hung but couldn't quite get over the hump against Purdue in November. And not to say that Purdue hasn't gotten better too, but like I'm not going to be shocked if Gonzaga makes a push. Maybe I'm overreacting to blowing out Kansas and, you know, a limping Kansas team. But I've been impressed with what I've seen from Gonzaga really for the better part of a month, 2 months. And so I think this is a team that's probably more of a factor than people are giving them credit.
Yeah, I don't know. Tyler.
Yeah, I think Clemson, I would have them, I would have them as a better ranked than this. I actually do think that Clemson has a higher ceiling than what most people think. I think the PJ Hall kid, I think he can play in the NBA. I think he's a dynamic big, and I think he's going to give some problems to Arizona, especially if he can stretch and bring them out. And also in Shefflin, I think he makes winning plays, and he's one of those guys that really plays his role and can make winning basketball plays. Joe Girard can, you know, you can rely on him. It's kind of the same things I've been repeating about Clemson, but also they have other athletes as well, and they have, you know, big guards too.
I love that you love Ian Shefflin so much. T.O. calls him your favorite coach's favorite player. And I guess he's Tyler Hansbrough's favorite player too. So, all right, let's get into the that next group of four. At 12, we had Alabama. At 11, we had Marquette. 10, Duke. And 9, the Creighton Blue Jays. I'm a little bit surprised that we have Marquette behind Duke, Tyler. That one caught me a little bit by surprise.
I actually would have Marquette and Duke a little bit higher. Yeah, you know, Duke has a – you know, they do have a high ceiling. You said they got three guards that can get you 20. I believe that as well. Filipowski, you know what he said, the dynamic big. Kolick, Marquette, those guys, they can get it rolling. Cam Jones, a very underrated player apparently. Didn't even make a Big East team, which is laughable. But, yeah, I would have those two teams higher for sure. I'm with you on that. And Creighton, by the way. Creighton has always been my sleeper. I would have them in a top eight team, potential title team as well.
Sweeney?
I mean, I do think on its face it's wild that a Duke team that won its first two games in the tournament by 55 points is number six in the country in KenPom, is I think 10th or 11th, we just said, in the Sweet 16 re-rank. Maybe that's just because of where we ranked them, but I would also say this. That tells you how good the Sweet 16 is going to be. Like, if you want to make an advertisement for why Thursday and Friday are going to be elite college basketball, like, that graphic and, like, where those teams are ranked with how good they are, that to me is the sales pitch.
Yeah. Imagine being one of these media members that said that there's no interesting storylines and the quality of basketball in college this year. Can't cut through the noise, huh? You know what? Maybe you should tune in to watch this Elite Eight. I think you might be impressed. Let's go to that next group of four. We have Illinois, Iowa State, Tennessee at 6, and Arizona at 5. My only gripe here is one, Illinois behind Iowa State, and two, that Creighton did not crack the top eight. I'm with you, Tyler. I think that Creighton is as good as we're going to find outside of that top four in college basketball this year. I think that I would make a pretty strong argument to get them up to number five. Sweeney, how do you feel about the Blue Jays and their chances to win a national title? For the record, I think they are the team that is best built to be able to take down Purdue.
Look, I don't hate that. I think this Creighton team, like, the depth to me worries me, but like when you see them weather the storm the way that they did against Oregon and play 50 minutes and they're not the ones that are tired, like, I mean, at some point, like, maybe it's not a huge concern. Maybe they can handle it. And we talk all the time, right? Like, guard play wins in March and defense wins in March. And they are a high-level, you know, backcourt with, you know, Shireman and Alexander and even Ashworth, who's, you know, played better here in the last, you know, month and a half, 2 months. And, you know, defensively, what they do with Kalkbrenner is really special and gives you an opportunity to really win games. So, I mean, they have been, like, I think every time Creighton has lost this year, for the most part, I've been shocked that they've lost. And maybe that's a weird barometer for a good team. But, like, in some ways, like, every time you see a team lose and you're like, floored that that result happened, I think that sort of paints the picture for why you should believe in this Creighton team. And maybe the consistency won't be there, right? Like, the last time this team won six straight games, they haven't done it actually all season. I thought they did it to start the year. They only 5-0. They haven't won six in a row all year. Maybe this is the time that they do it. But, man, like, it is hard to beat this Creighton team. Like, you have to really execute at a high level to do it.
Yeah. The only other thing that I would add about that top, the 5-8 is I feel like Arizona is the one team here where, like, their swings, Tyler, are the highest, where when you get the good Kylan Boswell and you get really good Caleb Love, that you have a chance to be looking at a team that on any given night could be the best team in college basketball. I also think that you have they're the one team here where you kind of look at them and say, wow, you know what? I'm pretty surprised that they didn't get upset at some point. Like, you didn't just have that horrible night from Caleb Love and Kylan Boswell doing one of his no-shows. And, you know, it just they are the toughest one for me in that group to be able to kind of slot into this ranking.
Yeah, and believe me, as a Carolina guy, I know the Caleb Love roller coaster, and I know what he can do when he gets hot in the tournament. So I would say, yeah, their peak, their ceiling, they could definitely be a contender if Caleb gets it rolling. And also, they play big, so they can give teams some problems. They can dominate the inside. And when you have that combination going, I think it it is an elite team, and they can definitely be a contender.
All right, let's get to this top four. No one is going to be shocked at the four that we have or the order that it is. North Carolina at four, Houston at three, Purdue at two, UConn at one. Here's what I want to hit you guys with on this. Sweeney, I'll go to you first on this one. What is the likelihood that we end up with a Final Four that is all one seeds? We haven't seen that since, I believe, 2008, the first Final Four that Tyler actually played in. Can we see it again? Is there like a realistic opportunity that is what's going to happen here?
Look, I think there's a path. I think the one thing is that the bracket isn't just chalky with the one seeds. It's chalky with, you know, throughout with all the Sweet 16 teams. So the path is really challenging for a lot of these teams, right? Like, I mean, for UConn to have to play an Elite Eight game against Illinois or Iowa State, you know, conference tournament champions, that's incredibly challenging. So look, I think at least one seed will lose. Like, I'd be surprised if we have a Final Four of them. But individually, it's hard for me to pick against any of those one seeds to not make it through their individual regions.
Yep. Tyler, the last time that we saw an Elite Eight that had four number one seeds and four number two seeds was in 2019. We also had four number three seeds in that event. That year, North Carolina, as a one seed, lost to number five, Auburn. Virginia, as a one seed, made the Final Four, won a national title. Gonzaga, as a one seed, lost to number three, Texas Tech, in the Elite Eight. And then Duke, as a one seed, lost to number two seed, Michigan State. So we ended up with just one seed in the Final Four that year. Listen, this has been the Field of 68 After Dark. Hang with us. Head over to the Stadium app. We are going to be doing a last call where we answer all of your questions. And we'll see you guys again tomorrow night.